The question is, what is it that we are carrying that is hindering us from reaching our summit? What is it that we have to unlearn? What is it that we have to leave behind for us to reach our mountaintop? There is no shortcut. You can't fake success and you can't want it to be instant. So it's something that happened over time. Don't look for instant gratifications. Build to last. We must think of growth. How do we grow businesses? How do we make sure that they are sustainable, that they are beyond us? And how do we make sure that you have the right team around you?
My name is Sarah Kumalo, a businesswoman, a mother, and an award-winning mountaineer. I know what it feels like when the ground shakes beneath you. 3 times, Mount Everest sent me back down through avalanche, earthquake, and injury. 3 times, the world told me to quit. I kept going, and on the 4th attempt, I stood on the summit. Most would call the earlier attempts failure, but I learned something different. The shift is not the disruption. The shift is the lesson. It's not the fall that defines you, but the rise. Because true failure only happens when you stop taking the next step. In when shift happens, we explore the moments that break us and how they build us. Take a breath. The air is thin up here and the views are worth it. Welcome to the summit journey. Let's go higher.
Welcome to When Shift Happens. When you finally reach the summit, who stands beside you? And if success is measured only by the silence of your own ego, does it really truly count? My guest today is Zakhele Mkhize, a mountaineer, co-founder of Intseka Foundation, a man who fuses ambition with community. A chartered accountant, MBA, and many other qualifications, I think philosophy is one of those, has 20 years in advisory experience. He's turned corporate success into a vehicle for social change. Through Intseka Foundation, he leads the spirit of Ubuntu by transforming summits into platforms for uplifting child-headed homes, the elderly, and young South Africans from all walks of life. His story reminds us that ambition means more when it serves others. Zakhele, welcome to the true climb of change.
Thanks, Sarah, and thanks for inviting me. Actually, I must declare this is my first podcast.
Oh, wow. Amazing. We are honored. Absolutely honored.
Thank you.
So when you look beyond the achievements, I don't think I even said all of them. Who is Zakhele Mkhize? Who is Kabazela? And what drives you to the climb?
Yes. No, thank you so much, Sarah. That's a very good question. And if I look back, actually, I look beyond titles. I don't recognize titles. I'm a simple man who was born in rural village, Mtubatuba, KwaZulu-Natal. I've witnessed poverty growing up, not just witnessed it, I've experienced it, experienced unemployment, experienced inequalities that still affect so many people around me and around our communities today. So the experience didn't just shape me, but it built a profound sense of responsibility. So my drive as I climb mountain is not to pursue more accolades, but a call for responsibility, a call to do something. If you were to ask me who is Zakhele now, a lot of things come in my head. Education contributes. As you said, I am a chartered accountant. So as we speak, some of that will be coming out. I am in business. Some of that will be coming out. I am in sports. I'm a chairman of the athletics club. I am a community leader. I am a theologian. I've just finished a master's in divinity. So Christian by faith. So all of that will then be coming out as we talk. What I see myself, it's really as a bridge, as a pillar, as a steward of what God has entrusted me to be able to bridge the gap between the haves and the haves not, to be able to carry the voice of the poor and the marginalized when I'm sitting in corporate tables, sitting with business leaders, to always share the stories and what is still happening on the ground. I have so much faith that it is not because of my own strength, it is not because of my abilities, but I truly believe that God has put me here for a purpose and He is in control.
Amazing. I think you've beautifully put it, and I've personally met some of the people that have benefited from Intseka Foundation and from your work, and I can attest to what you're saying. It's not many times you find people just talk and there's no action. You are the man of action, and I appreciate you for that. Your life, as you say, bridges two worlds, really the personal pursuit of summits, which you've climbed some of the seven summits, and also the collective purpose of community upliftment, which is a work that you're doing with the Intseka Foundation. How do you manage the internal shift between personal ambition and saving others?
Yeah, no, thanks for the chance again, Sarah. It's a good question. But I think there is a false narrative of that these are two different peaks. Actually, these are the parts of the same mountain. So it's not one or the other. Growing up, because sometimes we look and forget of where we come from. But growing up, we went to school. As we were going to school, we're still teaching others. So when we're looking at finishing matric, we did not look at self. We're saying when we finish matric, when we're thinking of going to university, when we going to university, and we'll be teaching each other to say, okay, how can we help others? If you don't have clothes to go matric dance, we'll borrow each other to say, you've been through your matric dance, let us give you clothes so that you can go to your own matric dance. We'll help each other. So in pursuit of personal ambition, we recognize the collective responsibility of helping each other, motivating each other, working together, praying together. We park that not only about us, but there were a lot of people that were helping us in between. The teachers, the communities, the aunts. Others really could not do much, but they will just pray for us and bless us. Pray for wisdom, that in whatever that we do, we still do it in wisdom. We pray for God guidance. So it's not to separate, say that I have to first finish with self and then start to help others. There is a shift. We have to understand that the personal achievements are meaningless unless they live used to leverage to advance the kingdom of God and to advance others. So that is the true achievement.
Yeah, I love that. I think we actually forget how we were raised by the community around us. And you're right, there was no competition. We were all planning to get out of a specific fix together. And somehow when we come to Joburg, my call to the city, that changes somehow. We forget that. So it's always good to get reminded about Ubuntu, about who we are and where we come from. So I appreciate that. So you've led companies. I know you were in one of the big fours and you've run your own companies and you've climbed mountains, as we mentioned, both requiring strategy, teamwork, and courage. What lessons from mountains specifically have most profoundly shaped the way you do business today in life, apart from your upbringing?
I think for each and every experience, there are things that you learn or you confirm what you already know. There are hard moments to say, this actually brings together what was in my mind already. So it's not something that is not learning, but confirming. But you also unlearn. So in the mountains, you there, and those three comes together. So what it confirmed to me, so it was mostly the confirmation and also to unlearn. What it's confirmed to me is the setting of goals. To say, once you've set the goals, I want to summit the mountains. Yeah, experiences, people tell you how it's going to be. But the moment you are in the mountains, you take those. But it's not exactly the way that you had initially, you have been taught or you were told. And no two mountains are the same. So you can take some of the lessons, but really no two mountains are the same. The conditions, everything, it's different. But you also have to focus. There is really no plan B when we say we are going to the top of the mountain. It is not easy. There is no easy summits. People can tell you that this mountain is better than this one. There is no easy summits, as there is no shortcut to the mountain. It's, you know, the processes of acclimatizing. If they were to take you and put you on top of the mountain immediately, you'll die, basically, because you cannot breathe. And it tells you that there is no shortcut. You can't fake success, and you can't want it to be instant. So it's something that happens over time. What also is important is everyone that is around you. We have shepherds. You have people that assist us to guide the way, people that walk with us. Others don't even know us, but they come that day to just mobilize and be with us in the mountains. But what is that then translate to? Is that don't look for instant gratifications. Build to last. We must think of growth. How do we grow businesses? How do we make sure that they are sustainable, that they are beyond us? And how do we make sure that you have the right team around you? Sometimes when we climbing, we get tired ourselves and we need assistance, carried up the mountains. We don't, when we up, we don't recognize those that has carried us and carried our bags. So how do we make sure that when we get tired, we have people that can also help us to still just take those a few steps to summit? So I'll give an example, a very good example, Sarah. When we went to Mount Elbrus, I think just a year or two before COVID, went up. When we were halfway, I got tired because we had started climbing for about 6 to 8 hours or something like that. And when we got tired, the weather started changing and being bad. And the guy then said, why don't we go down? Said, but there are still people in the mountain. So why are we going down? Said, the weather is bad and there are storms now. It's changing. It's risky. But in my mind, it was, this is not about this mountain. This mountain is just a ground or a training for bigger mountains, because my ambition was to go and climb Mount Everest. So if you cannot weather the storms now and run out, how can you go for the next summit? As we climb up, he kept on discouraging me. But what came into my mind is the realization of actually where we come from. Does this man even understand who I am? Does this man understand the suffering, the hardship that you have endured, and to come and tell me that you must give up? So I said to him, you know what, let's do this. I will move in front. You've been moving in front. If you can catch up with me, then we'll go back. Then we won't proceed. At that time, it's like God gave me additional power. I then started moving up the mountain with that, to say, this man is already writing me off. It's already saying that we cannot do this. Do you know, Uti Sipumapi? Do you know what we've been through? I moved up the mountain. When we've got up, I asked him to just help me take a picture. Now we have summited. He refused. I then try to open my bag and take out my phone, give it to someone. When I was doing that, my gloves flew, basically, because of the wind, the storms was bad. I managed to ask someone to take a picture, get my gloves, and then started moving down. I then say, hey, can we call for help? Because the weather says no one can help us at this stage, because the helicopters cannot see where we are. The storm is bad. As we come down, we spend a lot of time, just said, okay, let's keep on moving. It will get better. Probably the storm lasted about 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Hectic. No one, we could not even see a person next to me. Lessons there. It's no matter how bad is the storm, eventually
it will pass.
It will pass. No matter how people are trying to discourage you to achieving your goals, keep it there. Don't be demotivated. you know when what you've been through. So that must also be an encouragement to say that we must learn from the previous experiences. So we wait the storm, we trust the process, and we trust that whatever that we're going through, we will succeed and we achieve the purpose. So that has really helped me in business. We start different businesses. We've gone through turbulent times. We passed through COVID, but we're still here. So all those lessons really come to assist us as we run businesses. What's to unlearn? There are a lot of things that we also have to unlearn. Some of stereotypes. Some it's our habits. Probably as we grow up, we have a different worldview. When you are in business, you start realizing that, no, actually there are things that I must unlearn. The sense of I'm self-made. I'm here because of all my effort. The pride, the arrogance that I've made it. We must unlearn. Again, drawing from the mountains. In some of the mountains, when we're climbing up, there is a time, Sarah, you know, when they say, whatever baggage that you are carrying, you must bury here because it will be too heavy for you to move up. So there is time when you have to leave stuff that you are passionate. But I traveled with this thing from South Africa. They tell you, say, you have to be light.
Yes.
For you to go up, be as light as possible. The question is, what is it that we are carrying that is hindering us from reaching our summit? What is it that we have to unlearn? What is it that we have to leave behind for us to reach our mountaintop? Thank you.
Really, you've taken me up the mountain and you brought me back home and, you know, my own experiences. So I can relate to a lot of what you're saying. I mean, in life, there are things that we are so glued to or are loyal to that are no longer serving us. So the question is identifying what are those, as you rightly put it. I want to take you back to Zakele from Hlulhlwe, young with Ugogo and Omama. What shifted that, you know, made you believe that you can dream as big and have these ambitious goals that you have both in business as well as in sports? I know you're also doing Ironman all over the world. What happened? What shifted to make you believe that? Because there are a lot of people that are growing up in villages that cannot see beyond the village boundary.
Yeah. You know, that's a question that is always asked. As a young man, because purpose change over time. People want to believe that as a young person, I always dreamt of being a businessman. I've never thought of that I would become a businessman. At a young age, all what was important was to escape poverty. Yeah. And to escape poverty, so what was motivating us, hey, we have to make money. Because we knew, Uti, once you have money, you can buy food, you can have a basic shelter, you can buy a basic car and stuff. So that's what was driving us at that time. And the way, the how, it was through education. We knew that, okay, we have to start. We have to become professionals. Once you become a professional, then you'll earn a good salary. How did we choose to become chartered accountants? We just look for jobs that were paying more. So, yeah, if you put effort on something that will give you high income, high return. Said, this one, it's fewer. So if you become a chartered accountant, you'll get more, you'll get a job and you'll also be paid well. We said, that's where then we are going. But life throws different curveballs in your life. When we've joined corporate, we've realized that actually we had that sense of responsibility of saying there are so many that we have left behind. And how do we make sure that we can try to uplift them? And in that, we realized that probably corporate did not give us that platform. Understanding the numbers, understanding the background, we said the best way is to start our own business. If we do that, we'll be able to offer employment, we'll be able to offer bursaries, we'll be able to create a working environment where you cannot really separate between home, society, and work. It becomes just an extension. The environment where you can talk Zulu, Enyo, Xhosa, Pedi, your home language with your with your colleagues, and you are not being judged to. So create an environment where you're free. So that's what was driving us. Bearing in mind of where we come from, the pain, and say, but how can we make sure that the next generation don't experience what we experienced, and how can we assist them? That's when we then started creating corporates, foundations, and to pursue that. In sports, we say that for those that probably are not able to excel academically but have talent, how can we empower them by giving them the resources, coaching that they can excel in sport, same as in art. So our focus is really in education, sports, and art. Coming from the foundation perspective, a number of initiatives. We build old age homes. We build homes for the minor-headed families. We've built homes for the elderly. We provide food. So we're doing a number of initiatives. Why do we focus on the marginalized and vulnerables? Because oh mama bit, we born abasikhulisile. There will be time where abangasakwazi ukuzenzela bona, and they are relying on us. When we went to universities, they used to say bazobuya. So we will come back. So there was that hope in community that we'll come back. And how many of us have gone back to our communities and continue to uplift communities? Or mostly we then just abandon them and move on. So this has grown gradually as you continue to engage with the people. It's really the sense of love, the sense of responsibility. Love for our people, love for our neighbors. Joba sikhuluma ngobuntu is what, if I'm prospering, my prosperity alone without lifting others, how does it really help? Can it everything be just about me, or it has to be about us? So I think we always say profits are not the destination, but they are just fuel to transformation of others and communities.
Amazing. As you speak, I'm cognizant of the fact that there are many that have come from the villages, from impoverished environments, that are doing so well on the South African stage and even on the global stage, but they don't give back to communities where they come from. Why do you take on that responsibility? What happened to you that made you believe that this is it, when I think 90% of the people are not necessarily doing that? So what is it that happened to you as Zakele in your journey that made you believe that this is something that I want to do?
Yes. You know, that question has bothered me for years. And when I then started doing theology, it probably gave me an answer. In the past, I used to say, no. What made me contribute and give back, it's because of the journey that I've been through. It's because of the pain growing up. It was mostly painful, living in poverty, not even having money to register, sometimes go without food and stuff. So I used to think that probably this is what made me, because I can relate. If someone tells me that, hey, I'm hungry, you don't have to tell me twice, because I've been there. If someone tells me that, no, hey, I need money to go and register, my parents don't have, you don't have to explain yourself, because I've been there. And I believed that probably this is what made me contribute, and that makes what makes me want to give back. But I've also realized there are also other people that have gone through the similar experiences. They tell you, say, hey, we don't want anything to do with the poverty. Don't remind us. We are from there. We've managed to
escape.
Don't let those escape. They must find ways. Not just I told Indlelas, they must also find ways. And one reason why I've studied theology was to understand God that has blessed me, over the years that has helped me to escape poverty and helped me to be able to help others. Because in doing that, you realize there were people that were smarter than me. There were people that worked harder than me. So how did it happen that I escaped and be able to build businesses and foundations and stuff? The answer to that, Sarah, as a Christian, it says it is a gift from God. It's not something that you can claim. It's not something that you can work hard. This started before we even had money. We were giving our time to explain to others. When we see an old person carrying something, we'll run to help them to go to carry stuff and go home. So you realize it's not a money thing. It is just a gift. It is just a gift from God. And that's what does it say to me, to the foundation. The foundation, we don't look for donations. We really look and pray for people to have that spirit, the spirit of generosity, the spirit of giving. If you have that, money is not a problem.
Yeah. I love that. Very honest and authentic response, but also humbling to acknowledge that it's not me, but something bigger than me that's actually enabling the process. So thank you for sharing that. So when you set goals, how do you ensure that you create both value and meaning, saving both your shareholders and the community? Because at the end of the day, your shareholders are looking at the bottom line.
Yes. The idea of a multiple bottom line, it has always been there from the very beginning of Insira. Our goal is not just financial. Actually, a few things. I always say, growing up in this and experiencing money, it's actually never what made us. What made us was the togetherness, the bond that binds us. If you have something, you'll share. If I don't have, we never say, if we need that food, say, we never say who has. A person that has will just go and buy food. Omunya tengi polo, omunya tengi coke. We all eat. We don't say, now, next time, if you have. If no one even asked you. So when we've created companies from the very beginning, it was, say, a percentage of it must go towards helping others. So, but it has gone beyond just 10-12%. It's we give. For each and every business deal that we make, we say, okay, this is how we're going to be sharing profit. But before we shake hands, we must agree, how are we going to help others? If we're not agreeing on helping others, we really have no business doing business together. It cannot just be about me and you. Why do you need to make profits? We need to make sure that these businesses are sustainable so that our initiatives are sustainable. We've got 100 students that are in varsities that receive bursaries, stipends, accommodation, travel, and a lot of support. For that to happen, we need to make sure that our businesses are sustainable and making profits. If they are not sustainable, if we've got doctors that are studying for 6 years, if you recruit one, you must make sure that, hey, at least I'm doing my best, that they will also finish in year six. How many do we have in the program? Probably we have about 40. So you can think about that. On the economic aspect of it, while we have bursaries and stuff, we have also have a responsibility of creating jobs, of fighting unemployment. Our people, especially the youth, unemployment is at a high level. And who is it that then is expected to provide employment? If us, who have graduated, started businesses, are unable to do that, who must they look up to? So they're looking up to us to provide and create jobs. We talk of economic growth. How do we make sure that the economy grows? What is our role? How can we contribute? How can we use all these skills that we have gained from studying, working, to assist in driving economic growth, in creating employment, in bridging and fighting the inequalities? So it's really beyond. Some people will say, Why are you still working? Why are you still working so hard? I say it's not just about me. really beyond me. If you still go into rural villages and see people walking during the day for work, driving around here in Midrand, you see plumbers, you see helpers say, can we just give us work? That's what makes us, drives us to say it has to be not just about their profits. These people that are on the streets, they must be employed. They have families that they want to cater. They have families that they want to build. So how do we create opportunities for them? So again, coming back, it's really not about profits. Actually, profits are not even the main drivers. What drives us is when these graduates, starting to graduate, when you have built homes, when you have created employment, when you see them taking their children to school, living a dignified life, when you see people prosper, that's what really drives us.
Amazing. It's actually interesting. You are one of the few organizations that I learned, you don't just look at fees. You also look at where they're coming from. Does the family still expect something from the university person who's also trying to find his foot? You look at their tuition when they're struggling at school. I noticed one of the people that works in your organization looking at their results. You know, we need to be proactive before the end of the year. This person needs help. So it's comprehensive. It just goes beyond, let's just pay something and move on. And I appreciate you for that.
Thank you.
Progress in building communities and or scaling summits is rarely linear. There's always ups and downs, you know. When shift happens and the momentum slows, what three mental or spiritual practices help you stay motivated and persistent on the climb or the project that you're working on?
Probably the most is really seeking God's guidance. It's prayer and seeking God's guidance, the guidance of the Holy Spirit. So I pray, I read a scripture. I've got the likes of Nehemiah that have rebuilt walls of Jerusalem. And the first thing that they were doing in each and every action, they would pray, ask for God's guidance. So, and not only that, if I look back, our parents, our grandmothers, they used to pray, not to pray for prosperity, not to pray that we have big things, but they pray that we have wisdom, yes. We have clarity of mind. So if we were to pray for that wisdom, pray for guidance, because we do not know everything. As a matter of fact, we know very little or close to nothing. So there are a lot of decisions that we have to make. How do you know that this is the right decision? How do you know this is the business to pursue or this is not the business to pursue? How do you know this is a person to marry or not to marry? This is a person to engage with or not to engage with? So really, the guidance of the Holy Spirit and praying is critical. And we can talk about number of shifts, but those shifts, you don't even know about them. So how do you even know how to? So the guidance and say, God, please be with me on this one. The second one is remembering your why. Something that is, we say it a lot, but how often do we really apply it? Why are we doing this? Why am I here? What is it that I'm trying to do? So remembering that it is, again, not just about me. It's about those communities that are looking up to me. It's about that young child that when they look at you, they have hope. How do we unlock their potential, believing that they can also be like you or do better than you? How do you enable them? As I've said, we are called to be pillars, to provide support and strength to our communities and to others. It's really not about the personal gains. The last thing will be celebrating small victories and looking back, understanding where have you been and looking at where you are today. Just be grateful. If God that brought you to where you are, why you no longer believe that he can still carry you forward? If he has taken you to where you're coming from, to where you are, just take a moment and be grateful for that. And say, God, even if you were to leave me here now, you've been faithful. So what about then moving forward? That to me has really carried me, is to look back and say, I always say, I really cannot be poorer than where I come from. Things cannot be worse than where I come from. You can take everything, but I cannot be worse than where I come from.
Wow. I think it's about Ubuntu, it's about gratitude and acknowledging God, you know, it sounds like. So Ubuntu seems to be at the heart of your leadership and God as well, from what you've elaborated. How has the philosophy shaped your vision of Intsika Foundation and the broader definition of what success is?
Success is not my personal wealth or fame. Success is a striving community where no one is left in need.
Can we achieve that in South Africa?
There is a famous story of a child who was helping the sardines. I'm not sure if you know it.
No.
Sardine came out of the sea. The child started throwing them back one by one. And one man came to say, "What are you doing?" Said, "No, I'm throwing these sardine bags. Those that I've thrown back, they seem to survive and gain some life." Said, "But why wasting your time? Do you think we'll ever get all these sardines in?" Said, "But it matters to those that I've able to save."
True.
Yes.
True.
So you also learn that you're part of the ecosystem. I cannot do everything by myself. But the little impact that I can make in my communities, it contributes. I do not have solutions for the whole world, but I can probably, if I can make contribution to the 100 students and encourage them to go and make impact to their communities, probably over time, we'll be able to achieve or see prosperity. We should not be discouraged about the magnitude of the challenge that we are facing. We are not ignorant. We understand the level of poverty. We understand the level of inequalities. But how can we work together? We live in the country or in the world where you've got a lot of people with good hearts that are willing to help. How can we? You do your part, I do my part. And probably if we bring our collective effort, we'll start seeing the impact. It's really about encouraging others to say, the little that you can do in your community, the one or two people that you can take to universities, the old people that you can assist. If we're all doing it, it will really start making an impact. Let us take a step back. Imagine if we had more business leaders, graduates, doing the same. How big of an impact would be able to achieve?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think if we did that, the world would be a lot more different than it is today.
Yes. Yeah. So if we consider our success as just one being successful, and you look at the community that is around you that is still in poverty, I think then we would have failed the fundamental test of Ubuntu.
Absolutely.
Usho ukuthi asinabo ubuntu kahle kahle, siyabukhuluma nje.
Yeah.
Kodwa your neighbors are still struggling, and we are poor, man. God bless you, and do nothing about it.
Yeah. So it's just words without action.
Without action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for the listeners that are entrepreneurs, leaders, young dreamers, how can the spirit of Ubuntu become a daily leadership practice? You know, not just a value to speak about.
The biggest challenge that we have, probably as black people, is the scarcity. If you think that resources are scarce, it's all about you. So if we were to get rid of a scarcity mentality, to say we can all succeed, and it's fine. One thing that is in running comrades and stuff, to see thousands of people finishing, crossing the finish line, different times, all of them, they go back with their families celebrating the success. It tells you, actually, we can succeed. The fact that you finished, it doesn't take away my finish. the fact that we've taken so many people up the mountain, it doesn't take away the fact that you've submitted. Why do we want to be the only one? I was the first one. I was the last one. So let us strive that we see more, not to be the only one and the first one. I am the only black person in this organization. Mm-hmm. I am the first black person. It's good and well to be the first, but how many have you assisted after that? We are no longer saying and say, hey, I was the first, but now it is hundreds of us that we have climbed. So other people's success, it really does not take away from you. Scarcity, financial scarcity. Because I've made 1 rand, I must try to keep it. I met a friend that said, actually, there is no one who has become poorer by giving. So when you give, you are blessed. It has never happened. So let us have that. Say, let me give. We are better off. Meeting today, we share what we have and we say, hey, let's go and see what can we get tomorrow. Than me eating everything knowing that we are hungry. So if we were to just get rid of scarcity and have this abundance to say that we can, if we work together, we can achieve more. We can probably make more and assist more.
Yes, the scarcity mindset versus abundance mindset.
Yes.
That is quite profound. So you've achieved so much, you know, in your personal capacity, but every climber or business person has another peak ahead all the time. Even Mandela said, after climbing one hill, you realize there's much more. What summit are you still climbing personally, socially, spiritually, which defines your next chapter as Zakhele Mkhize?
No, thanks. As I've said, I've just finished personally, I've just finished a degree in theology. I'm currently doing a doctorate in business administration. But it's not the doctorate that is important. What is important, it's what's on it. I'm studying about how do we use public procurement to solve social problems. Mm-hmm. Government has a lot of spend in procurement expenditure. We've introduced BEE, but if you look at how much we spend, the measures that we've implemented, poverty still prevails, inequality is still high, unemployment is still high. So I'm trying to say, how do we contribute in making sure that as government, what is within our power to try to solve poverty and unemployment? Government has come up with a number of initiatives. For example, your preferential procurement, your SD, your enterprise development, but how do we make sure that the implementation, it's achieving the desired results and empowers the people? So when we're studying, say, it's not just about studying, but how do we contribute to finding practical solutions that we can go back and say, if we do 1, 2, 3, we can really see more people employed. We can see more hospitals being built, more schools being built. What is the model that can work? So when we come back, say, we not just about self now, we just want to have doctorate, but it helps us to argue with information, with facts. So when we say we've researched, it helps us to say, okay, these are the facts, so we do not have to argue. So that we're continuing to do. But what we're also doing, try to build more businesses. Our model, especially from the foundation side, it says we don't go and try to beg for contributions and stuff. We believe that if we build businesses that can contribute to the upliftment, we can see a change. So we say, let's build more businesses. In that, we see economic growth. We see more people being employed. Not only focusing on businesses and all of that, but how do we also grow as Abantu? Mm. How do we grow Ubuntu? How do we grow spiritually? So our focus is really on that at this stage. Not working alone, working with a lot of graduates that have completed and joined us. We've got leaders that have joined us. You've got people working hard every day to say, how can we be part of this mission? So again, it's really just a beyond a self. We all have a role to contribute. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. Leadership, it's not easy. There are a lot of hurdles, but we're steadfast and we're not giving up.
It excites me that it sounds like there's a way to make Intsika sustainable beyond Zakhele, you know, because some of those graduates are coming back to be part of the ecosystem. So that excites me. And thank you for sharing that. Unfortunately, with all good things, they come to an end. So I have my signature question for you, because we know that shift always happens. When shift happened in your life as Zakhele, what did it teach you about who you are and who you are becoming?
It has taught me that I must really not look to become a bigger business person or to be famous. It has taught me to be humbled. It has taught me the great sense of dependency on God. Shifts have taught me that it is not my successes, but it is my surrender to Him. It has shown me that my strength is not my own, but is founded in the power of the Holy Spirit. I've become a simpler man. Try to be as simple as possible. It has taught me to be relatable, that when I walk and talk with the marginalized, they see me as he is one of us. When I go to the boardrooms and talk about our challenges, our possible solutions, do it with humility, do it with a sense of love for our people. What it has taught me is that on the way, there will be a lot of storms, expected and unexpected. But the only thing that matters is faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love.
So true, and yet we all take it for granted. And what is sad is we all grew up in homes that was preached, that was practiced, and somehow along the way we forget. So today Zakhele reminded us of something we often forget. In a world driven by personal ambition, a summit means nothing if you arrive there alone. Behind every ascent is a community that shapes us, and ahead of every summit should be purpose that lifts others. Ambition is powerful, but ambition with Ubuntu is transformative. Profit builds companies, but purpose builds a legacy. Success elevates you, but service elevates everyone around you. Zakhele's story reminds us that the true measure of a climber isn't the peaks they reach, but the lives that rise because they climbed. As we face our own mountains, may we continue to dream bold, serve intentionally, and clear the path for those that follow. Because every time the air grows thin, it's not the summit that sustains us. It's the humanity we carry on our ascent. Thank you, Zakhele, for joining us today.
Thank you, Sarah, and thanks to your listeners.
If you would like to explore some of the lessons and tools we spoke about today, you'll find them in the show notes. If today's conversation spoke to you, share it with someone that's facing their own climb. Together, we are rising, one shift at a time. When Shift Happens is a Jackpod original podcast by Jacaranda FM. Let's go higher.